To succeed, just let go. This is Willie Horton, exploring how we must and can take control of our state of mind and transform our lives. You're very welcome.
Our world is awash with people behaving badly. We see it in our ordinary everyday lives. We see it on the roads. We see it in queues. We see it in the supermarket. We see it most pointedly, perhaps, on social media, where people behave even more badly than they would face to face with somebody because there's bravery in hiding behind your keyboard. We see it written large on the world stage at the moment, and we see it written small in the nitty-gritty of how people interact with us in our everyday lives, how people move us, manipulate us, maneuver us, treat us badly, treat us disrespectfully. We probably see it when we look in the mirror and consider some of the things that we do ourselves or have done ourselves, because even though we might be on a journey towards being more aware and more self-aware, we are all nobbled by the fact that we were born with a piece of equipment between our own two ears that developed over a long evolutionary process to enable us make it through the day and react to what we think is going on, so that all being normal, crazy people, we will from time to time, even as we progress along the journey of self-awareness, we will behave badly. Bad behavior starts the moment we're born. In fact, actually, research would confirm that bad behavior starts 3 months before we're born, when we begin to already pick up in the womb some of the stuff that's going on around us, some of the stress that our parents might be feeling, particularly if the mother is stressed, obviously. Parent and child are sharing the same bloodstream in those crucial months. But we develop in what developmental psychology calls the developmental niche. And we are obviously most influenced in those early days by our parents, peers, and siblings. In that order, more or less, our parents are obviously the fundamental and founding pillars of our understanding of how the world works. And this understanding begins to be picked up, as I said, 3 months before birth. We've talked before in this podcast about the third and crucial year of our lives when we learn theory of mind, but we're picking up stuff from the word go. And we're picking up subtle signals. We're picking up the behavior of, as I said a minute ago, our parents. But by the time we even get to 6 or 8 months old, if there are siblings around, we are being influenced and perhaps maltreated by our siblings. Before we go any further, let's talk about siblings for a minute, because the interaction between siblings is perhaps one of the most formative interactions we can experience as we are growing up. The way in which siblings interact with each other is obviously, at least partly and perhaps fundamentally and foundationally, founded upon how the parents treat siblings one to the other. Some siblings will be jealous of younger siblings from the word go. And very often the pecking order that we fit into as a result of the interaction with our siblings plays out for the rest of our lives. The point I'm making here, and I've seen it so many times over the years in the interactions I've had with my own one-to-one clients and with online program owners, the thing is that more often than not, the misbehavior of siblings in later life is simply a continuation of the misbehavior that started out at 1, 2, or 3 years of age. For whatever reasons, and we know from previous conversations, the reasons may be so subtle and the signs may actually have been misread by young and impressionable minds who didn't have the ability to fully understand what was going on in the context of the way in which they took the psychological snapshots that mark them for life, that mark us for life. The interaction of siblings is probably one of the more difficult challenges that people come across in later life. I've dealt with so many people who are being manipulated by older siblings, or indeed by younger siblings, or being literally excluded, ostracized from the family as a result of the manner in which their brother or sister has manipulated other family members, or indeed in later life, perhaps aging parents. I recollect having a conversation with a client who, in the midst of a family crisis, had sat down with his three siblings, all of them in their 50s at this stage, and he felt that he was immediately being bullied. He felt he was immediately being belittled. He felt that he was back the way he was when he was 3 or 4 years of age. And as I said to him, what happens when we get together with our siblings in later life, particularly in potentially stressful situations, is that we will revert to the roles that we occupied when we were young and impressionable. And if we were being bullied by a sibling or manipulated by a sibling when we were 3 or 4 years old, that will play out exactly as it did when we were 3 or 4 years old, 50 years later. 60 years later. And indeed, as I've said to so many people over the years, and I've said it in this podcast too, people don't get wiser as they grow old. They just grow older. 96% of people, normal crazy people, become more deeply and deeply embedded in the stuff that they learned about themselves and how to manipulate their way around other people when they were 2 or 3 years old. And that is why I said a moment ago that very often some of the most trying situations that I endeavour to assist people with come from the interaction of siblings. To go back to the point I was making a couple of minutes ago in relation to the so-called developmental niche. Now, the developmental niche is much bigger than the family unit. It actually incorporates the societal dynamics in which we grew up, the financial situation in which we grew up, the religious environment in which we grew up, and all of these subtle things. And, you know, for example, nobody will sit a six-month-old child down and talk to them about God. But the subtle signals are there all the time so that we pick up on our understandings of religion, for example, and spirituality, which are two different things, by the way, and God. We start picking up this stuff, as I said earlier on, from 3 months before we were born, because the signals are there all the time. And really young children, up to the age of 3, are soaking up everything that is going on around them. It isn't just related to what is said to them or done to them or done for them. Our parents are fundamental to our understanding of who we are, how the world works, and our place in it. Our siblings are obviously slightly secondarily, but only slightly secondarily, important in the context of our understanding of where we fit in the scheme of things. And as I said, particularly in the family scheme of things, and families are the most difficult and intractable situations to deal with in later life. Come back to that in a minute, because the whole thrust of this particular episode is dealing with the inappropriate behaviour that we see around us and sometimes for which we are responsible ourselves. But let's keep going and talk just for a few minutes about peers, because they're the third group that I mentioned. And, you know, peers, depending on our circumstances at home, can be at least as influential as siblings. The perhaps good thing about peers is that we're not part of the same family and we can ditch them in later life, or we can move away and move on from them, whereas we think we can't move away or move on from our own family. And I said, we think we know that. I know people who have effectively resigned from their own families as a result of the carry-on, the misbehaviour in the family environment. But again, as I said, we'll come back to that in a couple of minutes. What if you didn't have any peers when you were 2 or 3 years old during your crucially formative years? I recollect having a conversation over the course of 2 days. This individual was God help him, sent to me for 2 days by his boss to deal with his inappropriate behaviour at work. And we sat down the first morning, and he told me that he had been sent to somebody else prior to me for his inappropriate behaviour at work. He'd been sent to a psychiatrist for 6 sessions and had done 1 session. He said, I sat down with this person for 55 minutes, and for about 50 of those 55 minutes, they talked about themselves. I said, a typical psychiatrist. As I've said to you on this podcast before, one of my early influences in my study of psychology was a professor from the University of Sussex, just outside Brighton, who told me that the vast majority of people who choose to go down the path of psychology choose to do so to make themselves feel better about themselves. We won't go there. There's no merit in going there at all. But this guy had gone there. He'd actually paid for a session with a psychiatrist, in this case, who had talked about himself for 50 minutes. And in the 5 minutes that he was actually talking to the client, he diagnosed the client as suffering from depression. He wasn't suffering from depression. Nothing like it. As we progressed in our own conversation, we talked about how in his leadership position in the organization for which he then worked, he was, in the view of his boss, behaving badly towards the people who reported to him. He said, I don't really care about the people who report to me. Now, there's honesty if ever I heard. He wasn't going to make up some story about how he was trying to do better with the people who worked for him or how he wanted to improve himself. He came out straight with it and said, I don't care about the people who work for me. And therefore, he said, I'm sure I do behave badly towards them. I will never get the best out of them. Maybe I'm not leadership material. I said, regardless of whether you're not leadership material, you are certainly not and never were depressed. We explored his behaviour further. We explored his worldview and the disinterest he had for other people in his worldview in the context of the developmental niche that I talked about a few minutes ago. And what emerged was that he had grown up on a farm, one of 2 children. His brother was about 15 years older than him. So effectively, he wasn't his brother at all. He wasn't even at home most of the time when my client was 2 or 3 years old. So the brother had no influence over him. There was no sibling influence there at all. This guy grew up on his own during the crucial 3rd year of his life, when everybody learns theory of mind, which we have discussed before, how to collaborate, communicate, negotiate with others and manipulate other people. These are the things that we learn during the 3rd year of our lives. He learned none of that simply by virtue of the fact that he knew no peers. The first child of his own age that he encountered was when he went to school at 4 years of age, too late for him to learn theory of mind. And that is why he didn't appreciate the needs of others. That is why, to use his own words, he didn't care about others when he had risen to the rank of a leadership position in the organization for which he worked. The point I'm making is that parents, siblings, and peers have an extraordinary influence over how we behave ourselves in later life. And on the basis that the vast majority of people that we meet are misbehaving themselves as we encounter them, even at 3 years of age. Bear in mind, people at 3 years of age, one of the crucial things that they learn and that we all learned was how to manipulate others, how to put my little brother or little sister in his or her place. This is the stuff of normal, crazy misbehavior that starts at 2 or 3 years of age and that is repeated ad infinitum and automatically in later life. So if you're like the other individual that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago and find yourself in a family environment now as an adult where you feel as if you are being picked upon as a 2 or 3 year old, you need to ensure that you don't provide your siblings with the environment in which they continue or they can continue to behave badly. as I said a few minutes ago, the most intractable situations that I come across with one-to-one clients and online program owners are family situations. People behaving badly, and they've been behaving badly all of their lives, and my clients don't know how to deal with it, or actually aren't sure that they should deal with it at all. This leads me to a crucial point. The point that whilst we grow in awareness, and that growth in self-awareness gives us an understanding that our presence raises the game of all those around us, it will only raise the game of those around us who are open to becoming a little more present themselves. And an awful lot of people are not open to moving on from the 2 or 3 year old brat that they developed into at an early age. An awful lot of people are simply stuck and don't care to be unstuck on the basis that they don't even realize that they are stuck. So whilst every normal crazy person that you encounter deserves your presence, deserves to be uplifted by the attractiveness that comes with presence, if they are members of the vast majority of the herd who don't want to be uplifted, who don't want their eyes opened just a little bit as a result of your presence, then you should not tolerate their inappropriate behavior. The good book, and I've quoted the Bible before, and I could quote a variety of different so-called good books in this regard as well. The good book says that what you should do with people like that is walk out of their house, out into the middle of the road, and brush the very dust of their town off your feet and move on. Okay, it's a biblical anecdote, but it actually serves the point here. We need to ensure that we do not tolerate the misbehavior of other people. Now, that doesn't mean we need to confront other people. It means that we need to behave ourselves. Now, this is really important because the vast majority of people, ourselves included, when we are overwhelmed by the misbehavior of those around us, the vast majority of us will react to bad behavior. And our normal reaction to bad behavior is, unfortunately, to put up with it, which only perpetuates the bad behavior. And, you know, we've talked about this in the context of bullies at work before as well. But let's keep it simple in terms of close people, people to whom we are close or people who we think we're stuck with. Families, for example. The normal reaction to bad behavior is bad behavior. The unusual, the abnormal response to inappropriate behavior is to call the inappropriate behavior, to tell the other person that they are behaving inappropriately, and see where that leads. Let's tease this out. Let's tease it out from the perspective of another anecdote, a work anecdote in this case. One particular client joined a group of a dozen other long-standing clients for an advanced workshop in Dublin. This is probably 15 years ago at this stage. We were sitting around in a golf club in a semicircle, and we were talking about the experiences that we had had over the preceding year, since we had previously been together, with regard to how our adventure in developing self-awareness was going. This particular guy said, "I've been accused of being aggressive at work." And somebody else said, "One of my work colleagues has accused me of being increasingly aggressive as well." So we began to tease this out. The first guy gave an example of his aggressive behavior. He explained himself, in other words, in a safe environment to people who are all on the same adventure, same journey. He said, "I'd go into a meeting." He said, "I'd be the leader of the meeting. I would have set up the meeting. It might be a meeting that is an hour long or scheduled to be an hour long. And we'd sit down and people would start debating about this, that or the other, and very often start debating about things that had nothing to do with what the meeting was about. And I would get to the point of standing up maybe 20 minutes into a meeting and saying, 'Right, the meeting's over.' And people would look at me and say, 'Well, this meeting is supposed to last an hour.' And he would say to those people, 'Well, I'm not wasting Another 40 minutes of my time, I've wasted 20 minutes so far listening to nonsense that has nothing to do with the decision that this meeting was called to explore. He said, when you're ready to sit down and have a proper conversation that will lead to the decision or decisions that we need to make, then we'll have a meeting again. And he walked out of the room, and people accused him of being aggressive. No. What he was actually doing was calling out inappropriate behaviour. What he was actually doing was saying to people, don't waste my time by wasting your own time. What he was saying to other people was, don't take my energy from me, you energy vampires. What he was saying to other people was, when you're prepared to behave yourselves properly, we can all sit down and behave ourselves properly together and do what we're paid to do and move forward. But they thought he was being aggressive. Now, it actually mirrored, more or less, the experience that the other guy in the room had actually had, where he was being accused of being increasingly aggressive as well. Normal crazy people aren't used to having their inappropriate behaviour called out. And yet, we need to call out inappropriate behaviour. For a whole variety of reasons. First of all, the proliferation of inappropriate behaviour in this world of ours has climbed right to the top of the tree in leadership, or so-called leadership in this world of ours, and that inappropriate behaviour is heading and taking us all in a very dangerous direction. Inappropriate behaviour needs to be called out for that reason, if no other reason. But there are a load of other reasons. First of all, inappropriate behaviour on the part of anybody in my circle is actually sapping my universal energy. And my universal energy wasn't put on this earth to have it drained by energy vampires, people who don't know how to behave themselves and who are perpetuating their brat behaviour that they learned when they were 2 or 3 years old. And that is perhaps the most important reason why we shouldn't tolerate inappropriate behaviour. Inappropriate behaviour is everywhere. I was talking to a variety of people recently by email about how a child, son or daughter, or children, plural, were misbehaving towards parents who had given their all in bringing up those children, or in one or two cases, parents who were becoming dependent on younger people as a result of simply the aging process. As one person said to me, I never thought I'd be an aging person being bullied by my 50-year-old son. She said, but having listened to one of your podcasts, meaning one of my podcasts, when the 50-year-old arrived to give me another piece of his mind a few days ago, I gave him, and this is a quote, the bum's rush. And he got the message. It is so important that we say what needs to be said. And if the individual gets the message, well and good. But as we said earlier on, some people might never get the message. And if those people don't get the message, go out into the street and brush the very dust off the soles of your feet and move on. What am I talking about in terms of calling out inappropriate behaviour? I'm not talking about shouting and screaming at people. I'm not talking about reacting to people's reactive behaviour. Bear in mind, all inappropriate behaviour is reactive behaviour. It's automatic. It is as the result of people who are living their lives on automatic pilot, or at least, should I say, surviving on automatic pilot, reacting automatically to what they think is going on without ever stopping to consider who they are and what they're doing. It's all automatic, it's all reactive, and it is all, as a result, destructive. So we're not talking about getting involved in that game. We're not talking about reacting to reaction. We're talking about taking a step back, knowing what is best to say, and saying what needs to be said in the most appropriate way, which enhances the chance that the message we are trying to convey will actually be received loud and clear, understood, and be taken on board by the other person so that they begin to realize the fact that they are misbehaving, and the impact that their misbehavior is having on you. And, you know, for example, if you're a parent, a child who is misbehaving, I'm talking about adult children now, I'm not talking about 3 or 4 year olds, I'm talking about in later life. If you are a parent being abused by a child in later life, you need to ensure that what needs to be said is said in a way that ensures that they understand what you're saying. And not understand that, for example, you're hurt by their inappropriate behavior, but that you are pointing out the fact that they are behaving inappropriately. That's the key thing. All inappropriate behavior has a knock-on negative effect. That's a statement of fact. What I'm actually saying is that people need to be told that they are misbehaving. Now, people regularly will say to me, how do I do that? What am I going to say? How am I going to even set up a conversation with somebody who isn't talking to me at the moment? How do I prepare myself for something like that? And the answer is, of course, I prepare myself in the same way as I prepare myself for my everyday life and the opportunities that everyday life presents me with. I prepare myself by ensuring that I'm in the right state of mind as a result of sitting down to meditate properly every morning, or most mornings, and ensuring that I keep myself on my toes during the course of the day for the inevitable opportunity that will present itself, because that's what happens when you're in flow, for the inevitable opportunity that will present itself for you to say exactly what needs to be said. What needs to be said? You'll know what needs to be said if you're in flow when the opportunity arises. You don't need to worry about that. You don't even need to wonder about that in advance. What you need to do is ensure that you're present when the inevitable opportunity presents itself for you to say what needs to be said in the right way. How many times have we said in this podcast that when we're in flow, we do what we need to do and no more? Because so many people are wasting so much time and energy doing things and thinking about things that they think they need to do and wasting so much of their lives and not doing the important things, or actually thinking about how they think they couldn't do or say the things that need to be done or said. All that goes out the window when you're in flow. When you're in flow, you will be amazed. First of all, by the fact that the opportunity to say and do just the right thing in the right way at the right time so that the message lands, you'll be amazed at how the opportunity or opportunities arise. What's even more amazing, and so many people have said this to me, what is even more amazing is how you will say just what needs to be said without fear of making a fool of yourself or of being thought of badly or of upsetting the other person or thinking that you're upsetting the other person or saying something that you thought you couldn't get away with. You will be both amazed and amaze yourself. You will be amazed at how the opportunities arise, and you will amaze yourself at how you take those opportunities effortlessly and do just what needs to be done, say just what needs to be said. After that, it's up to, as we said earlier on, whether the recipient of your insights is willing to fully appreciate what is being said. But the possibility that they will be influenced by what is being said is greatly enhanced when you just say what needs to be said in the best possible way. We can't go through our days being knocked around the place by inappropriate behavior. We should not put up with it. We should ensure that inappropriate behavior is nipped in the bud in the nicest possible way. But if inappropriate behavior has run away with itself as a result of, for example, being part and parcel of so-called family life for decades, you obviously haven't had the opportunity to nip it in the bud. What you have to do is prune it at this stage. Prune it all the way back so that fresh shoots can grow and perhaps new and appropriate and proper relationships grow as a result. As always, like anything in life, dealing with the inappropriate behavior of others is all down to how you turn up to the here and now yourself. If you don't turn up to the here and now yourself, you're part of the problem. But if you do turn up to the here and now, by being present, being in flow, by training to be present and in flow through morning meditation, you're not going to misbehave. You're going to amaze yourself by putting your best foot forward effortlessly.
You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. Hope you've got a little something to help you transform your life today.